From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. He's a Minnesota guy on public radio with a loyal following. No, I'm not talking about myself. The Prairie Home Companion is my companion in the studio today. This hour, Garrison Keillor joins us to talk about his new book of poetry and to take a look at how he stays on top of his game when writing and producing. We'll also find out what he does to get around writer's block and discuss where he sees the future of public radio. That and the mystery of his Red Sox as we get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Garrison Keillor is known for many things: Minnesota and Lake Wobegon, rhubarb and summertime tomatoes, public radio, and monologues. But longtime fans know Keillor for at least one more thing, and that's poetry. His writer's almanac, distributed on public radio stations and by email, contains a daily poem, and it's a delightful respite from the daily grind. So maybe it's not surprising that Garrison Keillor is out with a new book, Oh, What a Luxury, versus Lyrical, Vulgar, Pathetic, and Profound. In it is a poem about Kansas and a chapter titled, Is Ethel Merman a Mormon? And yeah, I laughed out loud a whole bunch. He speaks in town on Tuesday night. More on that in just a minute. Garrison, such a pleasure to have you here. People who know me know I'm a deeply invested fan, and I hail from Stillwater, Minnesota.
Well, I hope that your investment is not wasted. Yeah. And Stillwater, Minnesota, awaits your return.
Yes, it does. I like it up there a whole lot. And, you know, you're working hard to make a place for poetry in our lives. I gather it's become a calling for you, and I'm wondering why.
Well, it's a way of arranging words in a way that makes them memorable. And that's the whole rationale behind writing in meter and rhyme. It is memorable. And to be remembered, I think, is the aim of every writer, to create something that people will think about after they've read it.
Where did the idea for the Writer's Almanac come from?
It just came out of the top of my head.
like that, most things. Yeah.
There should be a 5-minute show. I don't know that anybody had done that. A 5-minute show that included a calendar of notable events, mostly revolving around writers and invention, science, ingenuity, rather than politics, war, and then a poem, a little history lesson and a poem, all in 5 minutes. Who doesn't have 5 minutes? And so there it is, and it's been going forever.
You decide which poems to feature in a writer's almanac. How?
I want poems that someone can get with one hearing, even if there are other things going on in the background. Many stations broadcast the almanac in the early morning when people have children who are complaining and looking for their shoes, and somebody needs breakfast, and there's the newspaper there in front of them. And I want a poem that you don't have to study on the page. You can get it with one hearing.
You dedicated this book, your new book, Oh, What a Luxury, versus Lyrical, Vulgar, Pathetic, and Profound, to the masters of the house: Ogden Nash and Cole Porter, John Updike, Ira Gershwin, Roger Miller, and Roy Blunt Jr. How often do you get a chance to read those guys, even today?
I read them on the Writer's Almanac ever so often. John Updike, perhaps more than the others. Ogden Nash, still some. I grew up loving his work. Mm-hmm. I see I've left out the name of P.G. Woodhouse. I could have put him in there as well. But anyway, they represent what we awkwardly call light verse, light poems, meaning poems that are not heavy, poems that are meant to amuse, poems by writers who have come to realize that their grief, their anguish, their loneliness is no more interesting than anybody else's. And what's really interesting is the ability to entertain each other.
I wondered if you'd read one of your poems to us. You write about us down here, Kansas, on page 23. And I was struck by the fact that you like us, which is a wonderful thing because sometimes folks don't.
It's my ambition to ride a bicycle across Kansas, and I understand there are people who do it.
They do it.
They go west to east, so they have the wind to their backs, and I hear that it's a beautiful ride, and that's my hope someday. Kansas. Savannah, Santa Fe, Montana, Laurel Canyon, Susquehanna, San Francisco, or Manhattan, eat your heart out. I'm in Kansas. I'm in Kansas, handsome Kansas, in the land of long romances, fertile plants and cash finances, handsome mansions, the advance of man's expansion here in Kansas. Rembrandt, Cezanne could have painted Kansas. The landscapes like the south of France is. Chopin would have written dances had he hung his pants in Kansas. All the saints, including Francis, prayed that if the good Lord grants us second chances, could we transubstantiate to Kansas.
What a nice thing to say about us.
I'm not sure about the use of the word transubstantiate. I think my Catholic friends would have qualms about my using it, but there it is.
You know, just a few pages onward, on page 34, you have a little series on manners and the importance of manners in society that maybe too often gets overlooked. Would you give that one a rip?
You would think people would know these things without having to be told.
You would think.
But there are grown people who need to be instructed. Manners. Mind your manners at all times and places. Be polite on a regular basis. Say buenos dias as someone approaches, or if it's evening, say buenas noches. And please try not to stare. Everyone has their burden to bear, so don't be rude. The man with a snake around his neck and platform shoes and birdcage hair. Yes, he does appear to be nude, but what the heck? Everyone is somewhat unique. One man's normal is another man's freak. So no matter where you're from, you too may stick out like a sore thumb. Yes, that lady's neckline is low, but you've seen breasts before, I know. And unless you're an infant who needs to be fed, put your eyes back in your head. Good manners, what more can I say? Please and thank you go a long way. Excuse me, and after you, and if I may. Always chew with your mouth shut, and please don't scratch your butt. Do Swedes or Norwegians scratch their nether regions? Did President Bush reach back and itch his executive tush? No, only savage brutes digitally address their glutes. Someday you may be distinguished and give a speech in very good English at Harvard to heavy applause. And because you feel a low irritation, there is a temptation. But please, where were you raised? In a home of good taste or in a little mud hut? Don't scratch your butt. A fine young man on his way to a meeting, handsome, well-dressed, with a beard, across the parking lot was proceeding when suddenly his finger disappeared. I thought, please, don't pick your nose, no matter how good it feels. Doing it out in the open shows you're an oaf and alumics, even CEOs behind smoked glass in automobiles who suffer from social psychosis, don't pick their noses. Do, and your stock will drop, and that beautiful woman will cry, "Please stop," and she'll go away, and she will not miss you. Use a tissue.
I just think that's very funny. I just think the whole thing is funny. Where do you come up with this stuff? When did you write this stuff?
I saw a man in LaGuardia in the gate area without even trying to hide the fact was doing what I tell you not to do in that third poem. He was wearing a suit and a tie. He had a briefcase, and he was going at it. Where was his mother?
Where was his mother? Yeah. You know, you certainly get a sense that you want people to view poetry as a lot more fun than most people tend to view it. Do I have that right, or is that just so obvious it's not even worth asking?
About, I think, three-quarters or nine-tenths of all Americans left poetry behind in the 11th grade when they were forced to read The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot. T.S. Eliot, who came from a nice Unitarian family in St. Louis, Missouri, and was wildly unpopular as an undergraduate at Harvard, and who went over to the British, and who tried to be British, and who suffered a very unhappy first marriage. And out of that unhappy first marriage, he wrote a whole lot of very unhappy poems, which have been foisted on students ever since, Prufrock and The Wasteland and all the rest. And then he had a happy second marriage, and unfortunately all of his poems were written by then. So these are poems that he might have written, maybe, if he'd been married happily the first time and unhappily the second time. Well, I never cared for Prufrock, and it was forced on us, and we were told that it was a great poem, and so we were supposed to write essays about why it was a great poem, but it was not a great poem, and it still is not. But you had to pretend that it was in your English class. If you just said, "I don't like this," because 1, 2, 3, they looked at you as if you were not too bright, and you simply hadn't understood the assignment.
Well, if you're listening to this show, you recognize that voice. This is we're visiting with Garrison Keillor, and he'll join us again in our second segment this hour.
Oh, hear that old piano from down the avenue. I smell those roses, I look around for you. Oh, my sweet, sweet old someone, coming through that door. The band is playing, I feel like staying. Honey, could we ask for more?
We're visiting with Garrison Keillor, who has a new book out, Oh, What a Luxury, Versus Lyrical, Vulgar, Pathetic, and Profound. Garrison, I asked folks the last few days on Facebook and elsewhere what they wanted me to ask you, and so many wanted to know about the future of A Prairie Home Companion. I know you've been asked this a bunch. How much longer are you going to go?
Oh, who knows? None of us can claim to know. You know, we make plans and then they're interrupted by other things. That's the nature of life. We are piecing together the 2014-15 season of A Prairie Home Companion and making our plans. July of next summer, we will observe at the end of our season the 40th anniversary of the first broadcast.
Wow.
And so off we go. And We just take it, you know.
Yeah.
One step at a time. I have no long-term plans. I'm 71 years old, for heaven's sake. So you just enjoy your ice cream before it melts, and if there are seconds or thirds, good. Have those as well.
Could the show go on without you?
Oh, of course. Of course it could. I'd be happy to produce it. Why? You looking for a job?
No. I'm not sure that would be a very comfortable fit right now. I mean, Noah Adams tried it once, or in a way of speaking, and and you know, it was good, but it was not you.
Well, other things are not me either, and there are weeks when A Prairie Home Companion is not really me.
Yeah.
But you know, you move on. That's the beautiful thing about radio, is that it's self-erasing. The tide comes in and washes the sandcastle away, and then the next week you do it again. So, no, it's very possible. It's a live variety show with an element of comedy, an element of storytelling, and acoustic music, and there is a whole generation of young, ambitious, brilliant acoustic musicians coming along, and this is a good show for them.
When you started this thing almost 40 years ago now, in your wildest dreams, did you ever see this thing, ever seeing you having conversations like this in the year 2013?
We started out because it just seemed like an interesting thing to do. I had written a story for The New Yorker about the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, and seeing the Opry at the Ryman Auditorium made me feel that it looked like fun, and I was looking for something new to do in radio, and so I had musician friends, and without really much ambition or any idea of long term, we just started to do it and kept on doing it. There was nobody to discourage us. Public radio was in a very formative period back then. You have to understand, and all of these big broadcast organizations that exist today just were a few individuals in low rent headquarters. So it was all kind of seat of the pants back then. Easy to start a show like this one. And it was given a long time in which to succeed, or at least in which to figure out what it was trying to do. Nowadays, I don't think anyone would get that long a trial period. I think it probably took us 3 or 4 years before we even started to get the hang of it. I don't think people nowadays would have that freedom, because public radio has come so far down the road that if you didn't hit your stride in the first month or two, people would turn on you, and the pack would descend.
We're visiting with Garrison Keillor. You obviously tapped into something pretty profound, and I'm wondering, how would you describe what it is you tapped into, Garrison?
People like to feel the presence of other people and another person, and people like to turn on the radio and hear another person talk to them, who is talking to them, and who's not reading something off a script. And it's the reason for the success of Rush Limbaugh and the success of Ira Glass, and it's the reason for A Prairie Home Companion, and that just is the simple fact. The radio shows that I really loved are gone. But maybe they'll come back someday. I'm talking about a late-night show in which someone is sitting in a studio and he or she is talking to you and playing you music that he or she cares deeply about, and also sharing something of his or her day and what's on their mind. That sort of show was gone. I used to listen to shows like that. They came from little small-town radio stations, some old DJ up late at night and playing country music. I didn't care what the music was especially. It just was that feeling of companionship. And those shows are mostly gone. They're completely gone, I think, in public radio. And in public radio, we've gone down much more highly produced route into magazine format, news and talk. And it has its, you know, it has its merits, you know, to keep changing the subject. But the sort of show that I love, I hope will make a comeback somewhere.
You know, it's hard not to follow you and your work over the years and not be a little amazed by just how prolific you are and how hard you seem to work. I mean, this summer on your radio romance tour, which brought you to Starlight Theater here in Kansas City, you were in the midst of playing 26 cities in 30 days. That's a lot of shows. I mean, how well do you roll with that?
I thought it was great fun. It was great fun. I remember the Starlight. We've done several shows there, and we rolled into town, and you go out on stage, and the sun is still up.
Yeah, people wonder why you went out on stage with the sun still up.
Exactly, but you just take your microphone, and you walk out into the crowd, and there they are, and you get to meet all of these interesting people, and to look at them up close who care enough about a Prairie Home Companion that they want to come out and see what you look like, and you want to see what they look like. And so you walk out into the crowd, and the sun is just about to go down, and you sing America the Beautiful with them, and they all sing with you. And I saw her standing there, and I can't help falling in love with you. And you have this very warm, creaturely moment with all of these people who tune in the radio. It's hard to believe people still do that in this day and age, who are not completely obsessed with Facebook or, you know, texting back and forth, but who turn on the radio and sit and listen to it, and here they are. They're sitting and listening to you, and you tell them a story about Lake Wobegon and what's going on there, and about the Whippets and the Norwegian bachelor farmers and the Lutherans and Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility and the Statue of the Unknown Norwegian, and you just make your rounds, and it's a lovely moment. These people know you. They know you, that is, they know me, better than a lot of people I'm related to. and I don't know them at all. It's
strange?
It's interesting. It's interesting. It's not what we went into radio for, but here it is. It's a fact. They know me awfully well, and I don't know them, and yet there's this invisible bond here. Mm-hmm. I can't quite figure it out.
When it comes to writing Prairie Home Companion each week and coming up with all the ideas for the different scripts, how much involvement in the show do you have each week, Garrison, even now? Is it others help a little bit? Give us a sense of how the whole thing comes together.
I have researchers who send me notes on all sorts of things that I want to know more about, and I'm just sort of fishing around for ideas, and then I sit down and I write it. I write the Guy Noir, and I write the Lives of the Cowboys, and I get a little bit of help from a writer with the phone calls between Mom and Dwayne, because I really need a woman's sensibility to represent Mom, and so I have a writer who who has a mother, and she is very helpful. But I'm the one who's responsible for it, and I do the writing, and even more important, I do the rewriting, which is done late Friday night after we've read through the scripts with the actors, and the problems are all too evident when you hear things out loud. That's really the detector, you know, of mistakes. My advice for any writer, whatever you're writing, the way to find out what's weak and what's false in it is to read it out loud to yourself.
And you still wear red socks.
Well, I do, because I have so many of them now.
And people give them to you as gifts.
Why invest in non-red socks? It's just a habit, you know, it's a harmless habit.
Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're visiting with Garrison Keillor, who has yet another book out. This one, Oh, What a Luxury, Versus Lyrical, Vulgar, Pathetic, and Profound. He speaks at Unity Temple on the Plaza next Tuesday night, October 8th. We have a mutual friend up in Minnesota, Ralph Malmberg, who is the man you refer to as Ralph of Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery. You know, I check on him from time to time, and he seems to be doing quite well, I'm told. Have you visited with Ralph at all lately?
I haven't seen Ralph in a while. I'm glad to hear that he's doing well. He comes from sturdy Swedish stock, and he was a runner and a cross-country skier for a while, so he should be in fine fettle. But he ran Malmberg's grocery general store in Marine on St. Croix when I lived in Marine in the early days of Prairie Home Companion. And it was actually Judy Wilcox, my neighbor and landlady, who referred to it as Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery. Hmm. If you can't find it at Ralph's, you can get along without it, was her motto, not Ralph's. Ralph, I think, was always just faintly embarrassed by being included in a Prairie Home Companion. But I've never really told stories about Ralph of Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery. I respect Ralph Malmberg's privacy, and I know that it would give him fits if we actually told stories about him. So I just have him standing behind the meat counter, mm-hmm. and he's grinding, he's grinding chuck roast into a hamburger.
Lots of questions from Facebookers, Garrison. Brian Jeselnik writes this: where does he see radio in the next 20 years, more specifically public radio?
I still think that people like to be talked to, and they like to be talked to by someone who seems to be open-minded and to not have a big agenda. People don't much care to be preached to, but they love stories. They dearly love stories. Mm-hmm. And that's the appeal of the news, of course. And the news, I think, is the heart and soul of public radio. It's what we do that really matters in an age when newspapers are fading and trying to stay above water. There are many parts of the country where public radio is the main source of news for people of all political persuasions, and this is a crucial role. And God help us measure up to it.
Kathy Dameron wants to know, what does Garrison Keillor do to break through the occasional writer's block?
I don't have writer's block. I have not had writer's block that I can remember. I don't denigrate other people's struggles, but my deepest feeling is that writer's block is the result of trying to write something that you have no business trying to write. Mm-hmm. And it's nature's way of telling you to back off and do something else. If you are trying to write a novel to impress the ghost of some old English professor. This is not a good mission for you. The writer should sit down and write. Look for a route to write something that excites you and that entertains you. And if you are sufficiently excited, it'll just come. It really will. That's my kindest advice on writer's blocks.
A final question, Garrison. Laura wanted me to ask you about how you feel about Congress and the government shutdown.
Well, it's an interesting day because the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has committed himself to the idea that he will not allow bills to come to the floor of the House that do not have the support of a majority of the majority. There are plenty of votes in the House of Representatives to pass a simple, clean spending bill to keep the federal government going. But Republican moderates are holding their ranks. Even though it goes against their principles, they are staying united with the Tea Party Republicans, and that just can't go on much longer. People are walking down a road that comes to a dead end, and there are Republicans in Congress who are willing to say so. And it simply has to come to an end whenever they come to their senses.
Garrison Keillor's latest book, Oh, What a Luxury, Versus Lyrical, Vulgar, Pathetic, and Profound. And know what a pleasure this has been, Garrison. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks and good luck.